Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our host will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our host will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network, continuing our discussion of all things Star Wars animation. And we are here tonight to discuss Episode 19 of Season 4 of The Clone Wars, Massacre. And joining me for the next four parts, this entire final arc of the season, will be Arnie.
This is Arnie, co-host of Star Wars Action News, the Star Wars collecting podcast you can find at swactionnews.com, as well as Now Playing, the movie review podcast where we are leading up to the Avengers movie this May at nowplayingpodcast.com, watching all the Hulk, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, and other movies. Find that all at nowplayingpodcast.com. Very happy to be here on Republic Forces Radio Network because, Dan, I am privileged to be your brother.
Why, thank you, Arnie, and I'm a little bit behind on my Marvelous, or my, not my Marvelous, I'm a little bit behind.
I didn't even mention Marvelous.
I know. I'm a little bit behind on Now Playing, so I'm wondering, is Stuart still alive?
He is. He is in perfect hibernation.
He hasn't done harm to himself yet?
Not yet, but he's going to be hulking out in a couple of episodes from now, so stay tuned.
Awesome.
He's turning a little green. The wide eyes are having the high-pitched sound, the clothes are starting to tear, he's at the end of his rope.
Awesome. Also back for this arc is Jerry.
Oh, sorry, Dan. I was all distracted. I was crafting my voodoo doll of each and every one of you, so be careful.
I will keep that in mind. And also joining us is Nathan P. Butler.
Hey, everybody. Nathan P. Butler here. I've been gone for a few weeks, been putting out the new book, Wars, the Battle of Phobos on Red Soil, which is on Kindle and Nook right now. And we're putting out a ton of episodes out there for Star Wars Beyond the Films over at StarWarsReport.com. Busy few weeks, and I am very happy to be back for the final four of Season 4.
Now we are going to be discussing Episode 19, entitled Massacre, the beginning of our final arc, which promises big things with the return of Darth Maul, but not quite yet. For now, we're going to finally deal with all those backstabbings that happened between Asajj Ventress and the Night Sisters. So we're going to bring all that back to Dathomir. But before we get going, let's go around and see what everyone thought of this episode. And we will start with Arnie.
You know, I have to say that I was enthralled with this episode. And the way I can equate this is anyone who ever watched The X-Files will probably be able to relate to this metaphor. Did anyone on this call watch X-Files back first run?
Nope. Somewhat.
I used to... Robert Patrick. Admittedly, me as well. But I used to watch The X-Files every week. But most weeks, I'd watch it maybe while doing something else, fixing a computer or something. But the weeks that the cigarette-smoking man showed up, I had my full attention on it. I was engaged because these were the mythology episodes that pushed things forward and were game changers. And that's how I feel about this arc, just like the Savage Opress arc, is these with, I guess, Asajj Ventress. Asajj Ventress is now my cigarette-smoking man for the Clone Wars. I was jazzed and I was not let down.
All right, Jerry?
You know, overall, I enjoyed this episode. I mean, there's so many cool things that happen. But it occurred to me, it's like, you know, this is a weird cast. I mean, we have Grievous, Asajj Ventress, Dooku, all three in this episode. And I think that's got a lot of potential. And I, we'll talk our specific thoughts here. But I thought it was really cool how it all came together and the things we saw. The show didn't feel Star Wars-y. I mean, Arnie, it's interesting you're making the X-Files comparison because although I didn't think that at the time when you said it, I knew exactly what you're thinking of because I didn't watch a lot of X-Files, and just because the show was always a little weird to me when I would try to watch a little bit of it, I just couldn't stick with it. And this show didn't feel like I was in that galaxy far, far away, but it was still enjoyable. The only thing, the criticism that I'll make is that it just seems to me like we could have gotten this show all along. Like, they really should have led with something like this. Now it's almost like we've gotten, you know, a bunch of stuff in season four that we didn't really necessarily have to have because we've been waiting for this. And it just seems like it's out of the blue, out of nowhere. It literally picks up where the Savage Press episodes left off last season.
All right. And Nathan.
I like this episode, but I think the way that I think about this episode is very much like I did some of the others that I really liked earlier this season, in that it's a really good episode in general, especially compared to some of the other stuff we've gotten with the Clone Wars over the years. But at the same time, there's these small flaws that keep it from being what I would have wanted it to be. It was unusual. I mean, it had a very different feel, a little bit more of a horror and mysticism kind of feel. I mean, this is the first time, as far as I can recall, that we have had an episode with none of the protagonists in it. I mean, even Monster had at least some clone troopers being voiced, but this time, not even that. It's an episode that's essentially all villains all the time, but that makes it very hard to empathize with either side of the conflict this time around. You know, there are characters we're supposed to care about when they die, for instance, that we don't really get that kind of impact with. But you take it as a whole, creepy episode, definitely a game changer. It makes me wonder how the continuity is going to react to this, because the stuff with Ventress was already sort of out of left field compared to what comes later. But there's just those little things that have me shaking my head. You know, some of the camera angles had me shaking my head. Sounds that are just missing, for instance, during the fight between Ventress and Grievous, where all of a sudden she's knocked back and her lightsabers are off, and now she's charging forward with them on again, but you never hear them turn off or turn on in the entire process. Just little things like that left me thinking, this is what could be sort of a flawed bit of excellence in a sense here. So I don't know. I'm torn a little bit. Mostly good, though.
All right. Now, I really enjoy this episode. Like Nathan said, this was kind of an all-villain-centric episode, so we really didn't have any of our usual heroes to root for. But being how things have kind of gone awry for Asajj the past few times that we've seen her, I really was I was pulling for her. I was seeing how she was kind of the cast off apprentice here, and now she was trying to go back to some kind of comfort zone, and she was ready to go forward and just live her life there, but her old pals wouldn't quite let her. And so I was really able to kind of get into it, and I really enjoyed where it's taken. I feel with my limited continuity knowledge, not nearly as extensive, try that again, not nearly as extensive as our own Nathan Pease, but I feel like they kind of got themselves closer to where we can get back to some of the continuity for Dathomir and the Night Sisters and maybe get around to what eventually became or didn't become of Asajj Ventress. So we'll see. But all in all, I really enjoyed it. So let's jump right in. Now, we do open up to Asajj Ventress coming home, as it were, to Dathomir. She explains to Mother Talzin that everything went amok, which, of course, we know Mother Talzin already knows because she sent Savage Press on his way after the events unfolded. But now Asajj has come back, and she's basically looking for sanctuary, just a quiet place to settle down away from all this Sith craziness.
I'll be honest, looking at the way that Talzin reacts, I had to wonder throughout this episode to what degree Talzin is at all being honest with the way that she approaches Ventress here. You know, she talks about the things, you know, sort of that contradictory issue of, you know, you will no longer be ordered about except by us kind of stuff. But in the process of welcoming her back to the fold, making her a true Night Sister by going through that ritual and everything, she starts off not telling the truth about what was gone, or at least not mentioning. It's like it's a lie of omission. Not telling her anything about how Savage came back feeling betrayed and was sent out to find Maul and such. And we get the hint later, you know, you got to wonder, how is it that Dooku learns that Ventress came back to Dathomir? And where was she hiding and things like that? And I got the sense, given how prepared Talzin seemed to be with the lock of hair and everything, to attack Dooku as soon as his forces were focused on Dathomir. It kind of made me wonder if Talzin was perhaps the one who, upon seeing that she was on her way, or upon perhaps somehow learning or divining that Ventress was on her way back to Dathomir, that maybe she was the one who let Dooku know. Because in the end, of course, it's, yeah, we welcomed you back earlier on in the episode, but no. I'm still alive in my weird, green, misty, I'm going somewhere else form, but you have no place with us anymore. Your destiny is now your own, and they're casting her aside again. It kind of felt as though Talzin, I don't know if it was intended or just by the way that it played out on screen, it felt like there was this undercurrent of her having a very different set of motivations than what she made clear to Ventress throughout this entire episode. Maybe I'm just seeing things.
You know, Nathan, if that's in there, I don't think they did a good job of really explaining that. I just assumed that Mother Talzin's really smart, and when Dooku came, she just had a plan B. And I think maybe with seeing that Asajj Ventress is back, well, I'm glad I have this because you know Dooku's going to come after her. I didn't really see it as she putting the events in motion, but just being really, really darn smart about having all of her backup plans.
Yeah, that was kind of how I saw it, too. Not necessarily that it was Talzin betraying her to Dooku. I do see Talzin as never being completely straightforward with Asajj. And I don't think she's ever been straightforward with anybody. Honestly, it wouldn't have surprised me if as soon as the old lady gave out the incantation to bring back the dead Night Sister zombies, that she would have taken her out because, well, now I know the secrets. That wouldn't have surprised me one little bit.
By the way, what the heck was that? I keep an old decrepit lady in the closet.
Doesn't everybody?
You know, I think what gets me on that made me think that maybe she had something to do with it was, you know, right before the scene is stolen, when Dooku's talking to Grievous, right before it's stolen by that ham-fisted wipe the Night Sisters out, all of them thing, where it's another one of those examples of those lines that just, you know, if you're going to reference it in a way that doesn't feel jarring, this time didn't pass muster. In that same scene early on, Dooku just says essentially, we have learned that, or I have learned that Ventress has returned to Dathomir. Or I've learned through sources. The way that he puts it, I forget the exact quote, but the way that he puts it made it sound as though we should be wondering, how did he learn this, and yet no answer ever is forthcoming. Which I guess is part of why I started wondering down that path as I was watching the episode for a second time that maybe Talzin was the one who did it, was looking more at her motivations, her choices of words, and things like that. Anyway, like I said, I may be just seeing things.
Nathan, I was totally not even going to bring that line up because that ranks in the very top percentage of the worst rehashed lines ever in this series, and I did not want to talk about it.
Oh, it ranks. Oh, it does rank. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That means its rank. Pardon me. That's followed, of course, by what? Begin landing our as opposed to your troops from Grievous. But that's kind of the thing that we saw with this episode. It seemed as though, again, maybe I'm just hearing things in this case. Was anyone else feeling as though some of the portrayals of the characters, the voice acting, didn't sound normal? Like, some of the deliveries by Burton as Dooku didn't seem like the normal Dooku. Grievous especially, when Grievous talked without the coughing that just kind of went on, it didn't sound like we would expect of Grievous. And I don't know why, but for whatever reason, it rang wrong in my ears when listening to this episode. Maybe it's just the audio mix somehow. But again, something felt off about that, and it made me have, again, that look at this is an incredibly good episode in general, but it's got those little things that tarnish it here and there, and that was one of them. The voice acting didn't seem up to par with some of the previous episodes.
For me, I've watched this episode twice because of this recording, and I didn't notice the things that you're mentioning, Nathan. I still can't place some of the sound effects things you've mentioned. As far as the voice acting, Grievous and Dooku didn't stick out to me in this episode at all. I mean, Grievous's lines are almost entirely purely functional, and Dooku, most of his lines are spent with him writhing around with boils on his face. So I was focused so much on the Night Sisters and Mother Talzin and Asajj Ventress that I didn't pick up on any of these things, and I didn't find them detracting from this episode at all. I guess what was good about this episode was so good that I didn't notice these minor things.
So as we've kind of hinted around, Dooku hasn't exactly forgotten, even though he hasn't brought it up yet this season up until, well, now at the end of the season. He hasn't forgotten what happened way back at the end of season 3, where he was presented with this new apprentice, and it turns out that he was not what he thought he should have been, and, well, Savage did try to kill him and all, and turned out Asajj was in on it too. So now he has chosen the time to retaliate, and he sends General Grievous and a massive droid army. I mean, this thing looked bigger than what they sent to Naboo. For a few women and their bows and arrows, he must really want to make sure these guys get driven under. But he didn't even make an effort to go after the Knight Brothers or anything.
Come on, though. That armada looked cool. I mean, I think that this is the peak of their animation prowess. And sure, it's cut and paste, isn't it? We've designed the ship, and because it's all CG, we can make 1,000 of the ships. But it was impressive to me to see the Confederate might brought to bear against Dathomir, a planet that I knew from EU. I was geeking out over it. I was enjoying it.
Oh, it did look very pretty.
But see, that's what I was talking about in my opening comments, though. I mean, it feels like we had to endure 18 episodes to get this one. And we really wanted this one after Savage Opress. It's Mother Talzin sending Savage Opress off to look at Darth Maul. And it's like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? Show me that. Show me that. Start next season off with that. I want to see it. I want to see it. No, you got to sit through 18 other episodes first. And now we're going to do it. And there doesn't feel like, now I'm jumping ahead here, the preview for next week for Bounty does reveal something to us that I guess we needed the whole prison break episode, set of episodes, to kind of set up some of the kind of which characters are where. So maybe there's some redemption there. But this episode of Vacuum could have absolutely happened, have been released at any time. So I kind of, to me, it's a little jarring, not as a criticism about this particular episode, but just kind of weird how they're planning these out.
I'm not sure I'd say that we had to endure 18 other episodes. I mean, this season has been probably the most solid season we've gotten, at least of the first four, in my opinion. But at the same time, you know, I was kind of thinking the same thing. The Armada looks awesome, but wow, that's a lot. If they're not going after the Knight Brothers too, which they might have, you know, Knight Brothers are on the other side of the planet pretty much, so they could have gone after them with some of those ships. We just didn't necessarily see it. Yes, the Night Sisters are formidable. Maybe they need a lot of droids in order to fight them, not knowing that the undead army is coming. Although, granted, most of the Night Sisters, when they fight, seem to not be using the Force. It's mostly just their bow and arrow-looking blaster things. But I'll say the thing that got me about the Armada, it wasn't the overkill angle. It was Dooku's bravado. Because Dooku is essentially saying, you will go after them and crush them. I'm not afraid of their tricks or whatever it is that he says. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, because you're not going. Grievous is the one who's going to have to deal with them face to face. Why should we care if you're scared or not, if you're intimidated? If you'd be like Grievous sitting there grumbling on the way back to the ship, you know, he's talking about how we're finally going after the traitor Ventress. He should have been under his breath going, yeah, you're not scared because you're not going to be with me, you jerk.
I thought the same thing. It's like, I'm not scared to send a lot of droids plus Grievous.
I think he's more talking about the idea of reprisals. You know, I'm not afraid of going after the Night Sisters for fear of what they might do in return. But the way that it winds up sounding in the episode kind of made me chuckle as I was watching it. I mean, it makes for some cool tension, of course, though, because if Dooku is actually there on the scene, we would have been expecting Dooku versus Talzin. Instead, now we get a much more ethereal version of that same type of conflict that really shows off the immense power that Talzin and the Night Sisters have in relation to someone like Dooku, who is presumably extremely powerful in and of himself. I think they played that out well. I know I saw on some message boards people talking about, why is he not going himself? Because he's a Sith Lord. He could guarantee take down Talzin if he's with them. But I'm thinking, you know, it would have somewhat, you know, watered down the episode to actually have that be a physical confrontation like we might have expected. Give us the spiritual kind, and it actually raises the tension because you don't know how much damage could be done to Dooku in that sense as opposed to just lightsaber attacks. I mean, who knows what trauma this could inflict on him in the long run if they decide to follow it up.
What I liked about this was when I saw the previews for this episode, I didn't notice Grievous in them. I knew it was Dooku and Ventress and the Night Sisters again, which I fully expected based upon the Savage Opress trilogy. But when Grievous walked in, it struck me that during the first few seasons of this show, weren't Grievous and Dooku and Ventress all kind of interchangeable? It was like, well, this week we're going to have Dooku in here because last week we had Grievous. But in the end, they'd always end up in a lightsaber battle against a Jedi, and they'd always end up with their tail between their legs running for the stars, right? I mean, how boring were these three characters for the first couple seasons of this show? We'd always complain, why are they bringing them back? There's no tension. We know what happens. But with the single act of making Ventress their enemy and having them in fight, all of a sudden, I'm like, Dooku versus Ventress was cool. But now you bring in Grievous, and all of a sudden, like the 8-year-old who could beat in a fight Hulk versus Superman comes up. I'm like, I really don't know who would win Grievous versus Ventress. And the show went there, and I was happy it did. But the moment Grievous walked into the room, I'm like, Grievous versus Ventress? That is interesting.
See, Arnie, I've never felt that about Dooku, but I have always felt that way about Grievous and Ventress. That's literally like, okay, we haven't used one for a while, just like you said. But you're right. The fact that you're bringing the two stooges, for lack of better words, or the two flunkies together to go after each other, that's really exciting. I mean, I actually was sitting here watching. I actually watched it on my computer today. I didn't watch him when it aired, but I'm just sitting here thinking, "Ooh, is Asajj actually going to make it to Grievous and actually fight him?" No, they're going to be saving that for another episode, or, you know, something's going to get in the way, and that's going to be like the build up, and then I'm going to get disappointed by something. But no, those two fought a little bit. That was pretty cool.
I agree on the whole interchangeable thing early on in the series. Though the continuity disaster, or whatever you want to call it, that has been caused by Ventress all of a sudden not working for Dooku at this point pretty much renders a giant chunk of the previous Clone Wars continuity impossible. Unless they find some way to make it so that she re-enters Dooku's service either after the Obsession comic when she leaves in that comic, or after what's happening right now. But just from the standpoint of the series itself, because you almost got to look at it in a vacuum at this point, honestly, because the other stuff, who knows how much of it's going to survive. I was excited to finally get to see Ventress, first off, back again at all. I mean, we hadn't seen her since Witches of the Mist. It's been a while. Now she's back. She feels beaten, and we get this very new direction for her, apparently two new directions, Night Sister and then what she's going into next episode as a bounty hunter, apparently, or at least hooking up with some of them. But I did find that the whole Grievous versus Ventress thing, as much as when it came on screen I was like, yes, did not play out the way that I would have liked. It goes immediately into Grievous doing his little scissor thing, you know, the zzz buzzsaw lightsabers thing, which was all right. And for a minute there, they're fighting fiercely, and I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Right up until she manages to, and not counting the lightsaber sounds disappearing, she manages to take him down in a way that makes no sense. I slowed it down because I couldn't quite tell what she did. So it's in QuickTime because I've got it from iTunes, and I'm slowly scooting it forward. She swings her lightsaber and hits him on one of his big armored shoulder panels or upper arm panels. Upon hitting that, he falls on his butt, and somehow all four lightsabers shut down. How exactly does that work? Just the way that the fight ends, with her taking him down and the time at which he takes her down and leaves her again with lightsabers turned off, neither of those make a lot of logical sense in the way that the battle is playing out, and it felt very anticlimactic. To have them fight at all was awesome, but to have it end the way that it did felt like missed potential. I would love to see these two engage each other again sometime later in the series, maybe even talking about how this time settled nothing, now we finally finish it or something like that, you know? But I don't know, it seemed weird. It's like everybody's getting knocked on their butts, and as soon as you get knocked on your butt, apparently your lightsabers can't work anymore.
That was a little bit clumsily done. It was almost like she knew where the breaker was that would kind of shut him down for a moment. But honestly, that fight kind of went like I expected. I expected her at some point to get the upper hand and Grievous to just go, all right, start shooting again. And that's pretty much what they did.
See, and I was just thinking that despite all his bravado, Grievous can't stand up to any real Force user, right? Because of Force TK. But Ventress didn't really seem to use any of that until the droids started shooting. So I was a little disappointed that she didn't do more. It just was a straight up lightsaber battle when, I mean, Grievous is just so easy, right? You could force lightning him and he goes down. You can force push him and he goes down. You could force choke him. Can you choke him? I don't know what organ is in there in that little organ sac for respiration, but I assume you could choke him.
Get yourself a Gungan Booma. That's all that you need to fry that guy, apparently. But no, another thing that gets me is from a logical standpoint, it's really awesome to see the Defoliator back from Defenders of Peace. I mean, way back in season one, you know, they had the Defoliator and Loke Dird. Loke Dird has never made a reappearance in the show. He does wind up getting to show up in a couple of the spinoff novels before that line was canceled, Gambit Stealth and Gambit Siege. But it's cool to see it back, especially on a world that is kind of known for the natural elements. You know, the force on Dathomir, whether it's dark side or light side, is so intrinsically tied into the environment that seeing it devastated by the Defoliator is kind of a gut-wrenching type of thing if you're thinking of it in the EU perspective. You know, all the things we know about Dathomir, not just what we've seen in the series, because it's a kind of a long-existing place. I want to say it's like 1994, 1995-ish or something like that was whenever the planet was first created by Dave Wolverton. But again, going back to sort of the clumsy way of handling things, just like we've got her somehow knocking Grievous down and all his lightsabers shut down, every single time that Ventress is with any other Night Sisters when the defoliator tank fires. There's this wave of fire, and she always stops right outside of where the fire is going to stop. So either she's sensing the danger somehow or knows about the specs of this weapon enough to know exactly how far away she needs to be safe and can somehow make an accurate measurement of that mentally just by seeing or hearing where it hits. It seems really, really convenient that every single time it's wall of fire, wall of fire, wall of fire, and it stops like a foot or 2 feet away from where she and the others are standing. Again, you could have made this, they could have made this, a lot more dramatic if, you know, maybe some of the people behind her are getting wiped out and she's barely escaping. Maybe it singes her or something. Maybe she has to jump out of the way. But no, it's run, 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 duck behind this. Why are you ducking behind something, especially a tree, when there's fire coming? Oh, wait, the fire just stopped just shy of where you are. I guess you knew something the audience didn't.
Now, we've kind of jumped ahead, but this is a very fast-paced fight, and it kind of goes really fast. The droids start attacking, and things just start going crazy, and all of a sudden, Asajj is all the way up to Grievous, and they're fighting. But in the meantime, Mother Talzin has a few tricks up her sleeve, one of which is to go to the hidden cave and talk to old Daka and get her to resurrect some fallen Night Sisters to join in the fight. Now, once again, we're seeing the Separatists whip out the old zombie attack technique.
Creepy as hell. I gotta tell you, it takes a lot for a zombie story to actually make me kind of shiver and say, whoa, that was creepy. There's gotta be something really, really unnatural about it. Most zombie movies don't do it anymore. The Resident Evil games, I mean, I'm playing those things all the time. That really doesn't do it for me anymore as far as creepiness. And all these other attempts at Star Wars and zombies, whether it's the Brain Invaders stuff, Death Troopers, Red Harvest, the Planet of the Dead story from out of the old Star Wars tales that it is the Halloween special, none of that really made me feel at all like the zombies were creepy. But from the moment the first one comes out and is screaming and sort of readjusting its jaw, and then they zip forward with that unnatural kind of speed, that was really freaking creepy. I think it's one of the best examples of using a specific style of animation or style of movement to a character to emphasize a mood in an episode that we have ever seen on this series. It really kind of creeped me out, but it was totally awesome. And I mean, and that's not the only thing she had up her sleeve, right? I mean, she starts out with the whole, you know, the Magneto style, you know, Separatists, welcome to die, because she's got that orb around her and she's just firing off that green force lightning type stuff like crazy. These people are not to be messed with lightly.
You know, this is one of those episodes where I'm really glad that I did not watch it with my kids, though, because I found the whole chanting and the way they came alive and the way the zombies were, I found that, you know, a little scary, you know, for kids. And we've established back and forth whether this is a kid show or not, et cetera, et cetera. I think my son would have thought, he's almost 11, he probably would have thought it was really cool. But I'm really glad my 7.5-year-old daughter, that we just didn't happen to watch this on a Friday night in between other shows. I thought it was really intense. I mean, it was pretty cool, and you know, I can't wait to actually see this on Blu-ray, because I watched it on my computer, so I didn't really get the best visuals here, you know, even versus watching on HD or, you know, off of DirecTV or whatever. So really cool looking, and what a fascinating concept that, hey, there's only like 12 of us. We couldn't possibly fight an army, so let's just go bring up all the dead. And it's like, wow, these people have got some resources and got some tricks they can pull out of the bag.
You know, I've always been, even when I was a little kid, the kind of person who liked to push boundaries in my entertainment. And you mentioned a 7.5-year-old, and I think back to some of the scarier things of my childhood. And I'm going to go esoteric here on you. When I was like 6, there was a zombie Smurfs episode where a purple bug bit a Smurf and he became a zombie purple Smurf that would go gnap, gnap and try to bite other Smurfs on their butt and turn them purple as well, until eventually a zombie Smurf horde started to burn down Smurf Village, okay? It freaked my 6-year-old self out, and I loved it. You know, I think that this is edge pushing, but for that type of child who's like I was, who's, you know, you're not ready to show them Evil Dead yet, but they're going to be the type who, when they're old enough, will enjoy Evil Dead. This is perfectly 8-year-old appropriate, because it's not really scary, but it's freaky enough that it'll spark the imagination. So I think it was great for kids like me at that age. And I love that they never referred to them as zombies, because we already kind of did that with the nose snakes, right? But they were the undead. And I was curious when they said undead. I'm like, are they going to be zombies? What are they going to be? And then the design they came out with was so freaking cool. I'm going to pull a Baron and say, I want a figure of that. And I wanted to use 1996 light pipe technology so that their eyes glow green when I put a flashlight on top of them. They freaking rocked.
Let me toss out a trio of mini points on this one. The thing that Arnie's talking about with the issue of this fits that age group. Remember, for a while there were those things like Are You Afraid of the Dark and the Goosebumps type of books and stuff out there. Star Wars actually tried that for a little while with a series called Galaxy of Fear by Bantam Skylark. It was one of those, I think it was Bantam Skylark, it was one of those young reader series, but it was a horror-based series, kind of a creep-you-out bedtime story type of thing. And they actually tried the whole zombie thing in there. So I think he's exactly right that this may be a little edge-pushing for the little kids, but it certainly is in keeping with where they've sort of pushed things before. Second thing, this definitely fits the idea much more than anything we saw in the films with what Palpatine says in Episode 3 about how the dark side of the Force is the pathway to many abilities that some consider to be unnatural, more so than anything else we've seen the dark side do. This fits the term unnatural. As for pushing it for older audiences, we've already seen stuff like the terrorist plots and whatnot, but I found that when watching this episode, me and my girlfriend were watching and kind of laughing at it, a lot of the choices in the way that they framed a lot of the shots. There's the old thing about, you know, you divide the screen into thirds and you're supposed to put it on the line where the thirds divide either horizontally or vertically as a way of directing the eye but not making something the central point in the actual frame itself as far as attention goes. But it seemed like there were a lot of times they were showing Night Sister butts or Asajj Ventress upskirts, as it would be called, and so forth, that you could not have seen if this were, say, Ahsoka, hopefully, or if this were something where it was live-action people. So it seemed as though, even in the framing of certain shots, whether intentionally or not, kind of wonder who it was that edited this thing or framed the shots, it seemed like this was leaning more towards like the preteen, teen-type audience more so than it was toward the younger audience, which would certainly justify the zombies and whatnot.
Now, I do have to admit, I love me some zombies, and my children have slightly become tempered towards zombies. Not to an extreme amount, but, you know, they've seen Daddy carrying around the zombie survival guide, and they know that I've read World War Z quite a few times, so they know of my zombie love. And they both came in and saw me watching this over my shoulder, and then watched it after I got done watching the episode, and they enjoyed it very much. So I think my kids are on that line than Arnie mention as far as loving to get a little freaked out. And tragically, I also remember the Purple Smurf episode.
Zombie Smurf, scar you for life. Gnap.
Resident Evil Smurfs.
But that's not the only trick Mother Talzin has up her sleeve. She also has a lock of Count Dooku's hair. I'm sure that was given to her after a lovely night out and maybe dinner and some dancing. But she has a lock of Count Dooku's hair, which she drops into a churning cauldron and pulls out a voodoo doll, kind of waxy voodoo doll. And then things start to go awry for Dooku, who's across the galaxy, but starts getting boils and having convulsions and knows exactly what's going on immediately. Maybe you should have considered that before, you know, you sent droids to her house.
But he's not afraid of them, right? I love the fact that this puts him in his place. I mean, we see early in the episode, I'm not afraid of them. Of course, he's not going. And now, you know, he is given every reason to be deathly afraid of Talzin. It really kind of ups the ante on her abilities. And it gives us a form of torture, a form of attack that we haven't really seen before in this particular series, essentially going after the soul, in a sense, not so much the body, at least when she gets to that second phase of the thing. And the whole thing is intercut beautifully with what's going on with Ventress and Grievous and what's going on with the zombies versus the droids. It's a really well-played scene. It really reminded me of the battles we see in the Star Wars films, where you get the intercutting of several things that are all intense enough that you care about them separately, but together it really amps up the energy. Great sequence.
I have to admit, this was the low point of the show for me. I just thought the voodoo doll thing was a little dumb. I mean, it was good, Nathan, from your perspective, to create that other sense of urgency. Otherwise, it would have just been the droid army wiping them out. So you kind of had that greater thing at stake. But you know, it didn't seem smart at all. And maybe this show doesn't need to be smart. I mean, listen to a bunch of our other episodes and pick a, you know, pick some shows that maybe that we felt the same way about. But it just seemed kind of dumb for Star Wars. I don't know. It just didn't click with me. That was those were not the moments of the of this episode that I thought were best.
See, for me, I kind of come down the middle on that. I agree with you, Jerry, that I'm like, voodoo doll, that's kind of silly. But then I think back to like some of the EU and some of the retcons that I've seen in role-playing games where I'm like, well, really, is this much different than a force choke? And in maybe Mother Talzin and using the force needs a voodoo doll in order to focus that force power. I was just retconning it all away in my head so that it made more sense than a Gilligan's Island episode.
Well, you're being all sorts of kind to that moment.
See, but I think that some of the things they've done over the past season and a half have kind of been in an effect to kind of prepare us for this. I mean, when we had the first Night Sister arc, things got a little bit weird. And then we had the first of the droid-centric episodes this season where it was all mystical under the planet. So really, I think they've kind of geared us towards, we're going to delve this way occasionally. I mean, those of us with a little bit, who remember a little bit of you, remember that the Night Sisters use a form of the dark side of the Force, not necessarily as dark as Sith, and they kind of look at it as magic. But I mean, it's not as magical as, say, Ewoks, but all in all, I think that they've kind of prepared us for this moment, so we're not like, well, where did this come from?
I think it's more like, I mean, we've kind of got two different directions of them preparing for this. I'm right there with you on the idea that this, yeah, it takes it a little bit further. I mean, stuff like Mother Talzin being able to turn herself into essentially a cloud of spiritual energy of some kind, that's kind of pushing a little bit further than what we've seen with it. But they've definitely been preparing in a sense. I mean, you go back, who was technically, as far as retcons go at least, the first Night Sister we ever saw? Charl in Ewoks, The Battle for Endor. And this character changed her shape constantly. You know, the Raven or whatever it was she was turning into, whatever the Endor, I guess, version of Raven is. We still have to see a lot of the magic show up in there. Magic shows up in the Ewoks cartoons. And of course, Lucas had more of a hand in shaping where those would go, though not heavily so, certainly more so than where the EU would wind up going. So in a sense, you know, seeing something that's this magical and this kind of over the top with that terms of magic and such, it kind of fits where we've seen Lucas go before, maybe not in the films, but certainly in some of the side projects that have spun off of them. And at the same time, yeah, there are the EU people out there who are saying, I mean, I'm an EU person myself, but there are people out there arguing, you know, this can't happen. Voodoo dolls shouldn't work. This is Star Wars. You know, that's not the Force. That's magic. And those two aren't the same. But you look at the EU, whether it's Sith alchemy or any number of other things that we've seen in the EU, all these divergent force practices, there are far too many other forms of force use in the EU to turn and look at one type of force use that someone's come up with. In this case, Lucas and the TV show crew, and say, nope, sorry, that can't work, when so many others are accepted. I'm really looking forward to reading the segment about the Night Sisters in the Book of Sith that just came out, because I want to see how they're able to fit this in with everything else. But to dismiss it out of hand because it's just magic like some people do, I think is being unfair to the saga and the series.
Well, two things on that. Defending this by citing the Endor movies is not a good play, Nathan. But secondly, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek of that, of course. But secondly, I didn't find the voodoo doll dumb because it was magic. I found it dumb just because it was very cliche. I mean, you see voodoo dolls and all kinds of stupid stuff. And for me, Star Wars doing that was kind of dumb. But, you know, I get what they need to do. They had to put Dooku in some sort of peril. And considering that he's not on the planet, all right, fine. You need something like that. I didn't mind the magic. I mean, you know, I'm like Dan. I really tie that, you know, we have some mastery of the Force. We don't think of it as the Force. It's not light side, dark side. Perhaps we're ignorant. To us, it's just magic, and we use it in our own little way, and good for them. But But the good news is it didn't ruin it for me.
Let me ask the question then, because this came up a lot when I was reading the Dresden Files, how a lot of magic in the Dresden Files is based around the idea of needing some kind of personal connection between the person who's doing the magic and the one the magic is being done against, like a tracking spell needs a lock of hair or something like that, which is essentially what they're doing here. If she hadn't had something personal of Dooku's, like his hair, and the voodoo doll as essentially a focusing instrument, for lack of a better term, would fans in general, would we have been accepting of the idea that she could do something to Dooku across the galaxy without those being involved? Because I think that if she had done it without the voodoo doll, without the lock of hair, and somehow that's just one of her abilities, it would have strained credibility on any other Force users not being able to do that. You know, Anakin not being able to just reach out and crush Grievous anytime that he wanted, or reach out and touch anyone, to use the old phone company slogan there. We almost need those, in my opinion, in order to make it work. What do you guys think? Was it necessary, or was that overkill?
Well, I'm thinking about it much more broadly. I would have rather seen Dooku sneak in the back door and let Grievous be a distraction, and him and Talzin go back with some force power exchanges for a little bit, and then let Grievous kind of just break it up. I would have rather seen something like that versus any across the galaxy sort of attack.
Well, what's the limit on the force? I mean, we saw Vader choke Admiral Ozzel, and that was across the reaches of space. It could have been light years. What difference is it if it's across the galaxy? No different. Only difference in your mind. I mean, you can choke across the galaxy as easily as you can choke across the room. I went with it, again, as a force power with the hair and the voodoo doll as a focusing thing. If she'd done nothing, then it just becomes, she's like Kip Duran, right? Just too powerful.
But wasn't at that point, I mean, I'd have to go back and watch, but wasn't the Death Squadron together at that point? So, I mean, yeah, it's a longer distance than, say, across the room, but it's still not, you know, planet to planet across vast, vast reaches of space. You got to figure there's some kind of limit to what the Force can do from a distance perspective, if only because if you don't have a limit to what it can do, all of a sudden all these characters can do whatever they want, wherever they want, whenever they want, and to have these characters not be able to do that makes everybody but Talzin a step lower, a step weaker than they should be, or it makes her almost godlike. Or goddess-like, I suppose, with the manly whispers. It's kind of hard to tell sometimes.
Well, having to use the hair and the voodoo doll is kind of like a channel for her to get a direct line, as it were, for Dooku across the reaches of space. That works out for me. I mean, we've seen, like Arnie mentioned, with Vader and Ozzel, the Force working across space. You don't have to be 10 feet away where you could have walked across the room and choked the guy by hand. But, I mean, also in Empire, we see Vader calling to Luke while they're nearby, and Jedi, Leia senses that Luke's not dead when the Death Star explodes. So there's a distance to the Force, but maybe having this to channel it specifically to make a longer distance call, as it were, that's okay with me. I'm all right with that.
Speaking of the issues of how the magic works, I mean, again, maybe I'm just reading too much into Talzin and thinking that Talzin is a lot more scheming than she is perhaps made out to be. But it seemed to me, you know, how is it that Dooku tells Grievous to find Mother Talzin and take her down? There's this green energy that's animating the zombies or the undead. Follow the green energy source. You will find Talzin. Then you can kill her. But it's not Talzin who is doing it. It's old Daka with that gigantic head of hers, right? That looks kind of like the Geonosian queen. And here comes in Grievous and just stabs her to death like it's nothing. You got to wonder, maybe was it perhaps something? I mean, maybe Daka was the only one who could do the ritual to bring in the undead. Maybe. Maybe Talzin just wanted to be free to do the Dooku thing. But it kind of seemed interesting that, you know, in making Daka be the one to do that spell, it keeps Talzin from being able to be tracked the way that Daka is, just by following the orange shimmering in the air. Anybody else think that that was perhaps something where she was essentially insulating herself from possibly being tracked? Or is that just, again, me reading too much into her motives?
You know, Nathan, I thought that was interesting because that confused me as well at first. With, number one, how Dooku know there was a green fog emitting from anything, green mist at all. But then it occurred to me, it's like, well, is that just saying, hey, follow that source because Talzin should be close? If Talzin was really clever and decided to change locations to do that, and didn't have a tie to the resurrection chant, then Dooku would have been screwed. You know, I guess you could argue that Dooku's throwing that hint out because it's as good as any chance he has, and chances are they're together. But yeah, I'm like you. I had to think about it for a second because I'm like, wait a minute, that green mist has nothing to do with the voodoo magic that Talzin's doing, is it? Or was it? Or was it both? Or yeah, so that was a little weird. But you know, again, the thing I'm going through my mind watching this, I think this is kind of played into my dumb thing with the voodoo doll, is that it's on Dooku. It's like, we know this is going to end, you know, not for Dooku, but the whole thing's going to end. He's going to be fine. So I think maybe that played into it a little bit. Not only was it a voodoo doll, but it's some amount of drama and, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? Well, of course he's going to be fine. So it felt unnecessary. The whole thing was just weird, especially the way they wrapped it up. So I think you had a really good point, Nathan, about how all that just happened to play out for Dooku.
You think maybe he knew about the way that it was supposed to work, the same way that she got the lock of his hair? Like maybe one night while they're over drinks, you know, she takes a lock of his hair and he asks, you know, how do you do that voodoo you do?
If anybody was going to make that reference, I knew I could count on Nathan.
Yes!
So we've kind of jumped right ahead to the end here, and well, it is kind of the end, because Dooku does tell Grievous to go after Mother Talzin rather than Asajj, and they blow a hole in the secret cave and make everybody real dead, and then make everybody real dead. And without old Daka there to resurrect everybody, because, well, she's now dead too, the Night Sisters quickly fall to the battle droids. Mother Talzin mists out and appears in a fleeting glance to a wounded Asajj to tell her that everybody's dead, you're on your own. And that's kind of how we end it.
Yeah, I'm not happy with this ending. Again, watched it twice, still a bit confused. I get that they killed the Uber Witch and the undead all became re-dead. But then I'm like, all right, so Asajj is now on her own. Why'd they bother putting her through the Lambda 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 initiation rite if they were just gonna ditch her when things go sour? Were all the other Night Sisters dead or just retreated? Was Mother Talzin? Why was she all misty? I was just really confused and found this to be kind of a lame way to end a rocking episode.
Awesome. I looked at this completely the opposite, actually. I looked at this as, okay, they're going to pretty much assume, or let us assume, that all the Night Sisters are dead. Mother Talzin may or may not be. We're going to have this mysterious planet that Palpatine now wants to avoid. We're kind of hitting where we were like, wait a minute, when we first came to Dathomir, with where it had been established in the EU, I thought maybe we were going to walk away from Dathomir and leave it in a good place where it might be able to recover.
I have to say, I like the fact that they've left it in a position where what we have come to expect in the EU of Dathomir, you know, where it's placed off limits by Palpatine and so forth, it kind of makes sense that that could happen sometime in the near future, or at least logically it would make sense to proceed from where this episode is ending. It still leaves Ventress in a position where her going back to Dooku seems relatively impossible, which leaves a huge question mark over a big chunk of that prior EU. But I have to say, this is one of those few times in the episode where it seemed like they were purposely going for a specific emotion of sympathy in Ventress, where it almost got me, like at least to a degree. Because early on you get, you know, oh look, she's made a pal. It's Karis, voiced by Kat Tabor. Remember? She was in Night Sisters and Monster. Splat! She's dead. Big ol' freaking block crushes her to death. Then Lusa or Luce or Luke or whatever her name is, voiced by Jamie King, another of the Night Sisters that's back. Sorry, this one's the new one, the one with the crazy spiky like punk kind of hairdo. She's shot in the back. She's dead. Go save yourself or whatever. You know, it's finished. She's dead. Still don't feel the emotional impact of either of those two because we weren't really given a sense much of a friendship between them and Ventress. And, you know, they're part of a group we tend to think of as villains. We've yet to have any reason to care when they die as opposed to go, yes, when they die, as the case may be. Old Daka dying, no real impact there, though that at least they weren't pushing for the sympathy thing. But then you finally get to the end. And you've got Ventress left there all alone with that camera angle kind of pulling out from her on her knees, essentially, you know, please don't leave me here kind of stuff. And if it were any other character, I think that it would have ended the episode on a real down ouch kind of note where you really felt a lot of sympathy for that character. And it would have left us wondering what happens in the next episode. In this case, it's Ventress. And we've kind of grown to hate the Ventress character for the most part. Not think she's a bad character, but think that, you know, she's a character you are expected to despise because she's a villainess. And nothing that we've seen in the arc with Savage Opress or this arc so far has given us any reason to question the idea that she is evil. Granted, there are others perhaps more evil than she is. Maybe she's the lesser of evils in this episode, but she's still evil. So when she is like, "Don't leave me," I'm sitting there, part of me is saying, "Aw," and I'm feeling the sympathy that I would for any other character. But another part of me is like, whatever, it's Ventress. So something bad's happening to somebody we're meant to dislike. Oh well, you know what I mean? I think they were going for something that, for some of the audience, they probably hit the exact right note. For many of us who've been watching for a long time, it almost hit the note, but at least it started a little bit of a push of sympathy for Ventress that maybe will allow us to care more about her as a protagonist rather than antagonist the way this arc continues to play out over the next three episodes, hopefully.
I think that's definitely where they're trying to aim it, and I do like that switcheroo. I like trying to take this, again, as I said earlier, this podcast, stock, bland villain, and trying to turn her into a real character. And yeah, she's the hero of this episode, or at least our protagonist. And I'm not sure it entirely worked for me. I just don't click with the character. I'm excited for where the story is going, but I can't say I really felt bad for her because I just remember all the times I was meant to dislike her. So did you guys see the trailer for next week? Because as excited as this episode made me, and as downright impatient I am for them to really get to the Zabrak brothers, the yellow and red of Opress and Maul, next week looks a little weird with the Cartoon Network trailer I saw where it's like, it's a bad group of bounty hunters when Ventress is the least experienced or something like that. Bad as in like badass, not bad as in lame. Greedo isn't back or anything. So I'm like, I don't know that I need a filler episode of Ventress hanging out with Bossk and some other bounty hunters before we get to the meat of this. I really feel like next week they're stretching it thin based on my trailer.
Well, and kind of what I got out of it in the trailer that you see, or kind of the preview on StarWars.com, I mean, you have obviously a very strong appearance by Boba Fett. And you kind of wonder, it's like, okay, I guess I'm a broken record here because I'm like, okay, now we're getting to see Boba Fett again. We wanted to see what happened to him, but I guess right now I fail to see what a useful, Arnie, like you, I fail to see what a useful story with all those bounty hunters and Asajj can be when we know we've got the Darth Maul and Savage Opress story ahead of us. I mean, I don't know how they're going to connect. Maybe they're going to connect in some really cool way that's going to blow our minds. I guess I'm not holding my breath for that yet. I guess, like you, Arnie, I'm fearing a filler episode, but at least we know we get the Clone Wars debut of Dengar, and I'm just disappointed he doesn't sound like he did in the Robot Chicken specials.
Now, I didn't see the Cartoon Network preview. I only saw the StarWars.com one. Do get to see Dengar, and we get to see Boba, and we get to see Boss. So now I'm thinking we've seen those three in this coming episode. We've seen IG-86s in previous episodes. It's only a matter of time before they find a way to shoehorn in Forlom and Zuckuss. You know? Have we seen a Gand yet in this series? Are we just waiting for that model?
I don't remember one in the series personally.
See, could be on the horizon. But this episode is another one. I mean, we referenced it already in our discussion with them bringing out the defoliator. It feels like they're kind of bringing up everything that we've seen in previous seasons. This, if it wasn't for the fact that we know this isn't the final arc of this show, this kind of feels like a pull out all the stops for our last big hurrah kind of story arc. I mean, we're getting throwbacks left and right to previous seasons, previous episodes. We're getting things wrapped up from stories last season. This is, I could honestly wouldn't be surprised for them to, if they were to say, this is the end after the Darth Maul. I mean, I'm sure that they're not. They're riding that crest.
I think you're taking it a little bit too far with that, Dan, just personally, because to me, this feels like a continuation, if it was all coming to a head, if we had more involvement from Sidious and Anakin and Obi-Wan, if, hey, the gang's all here, then I would agree with you. It would feel climactic enough to be a finale. But as it is, this feels like a completely separate storyline from what we've seen since the Savage Press last time. I mean, again, we have a Jedi-less episode. We have a Republic-less episode of the Clone Wars. And so to me, this almost feels like a totally different and honestly more interesting television series. I would be upset if this was the resolution because it just isn't enough, because we have the other questions. What happens to Ahsoka? How does it all go down? And I'm looking forward to seeing it go that way. My biggest disappointment, when the Savage Press trilogy aired in theaters that I got to go see back in 2010, let's remember how long ago that was, folks. I was so excited because I felt like what was going to happen would happen again that season. And when it didn't, I'm like, okay, well, they're going to have to open the new season with it. And they started teasing us with Maul. I'm like, okay, spring, it's the freaking last arc. I just really hope I don't have to wait another 12 to 16 months before I get more of this story. But to me, this is the most excited I've been for the Clone Wars since before it premiered.
I have to say, I'm kind of torn at this point. I'm very excited for the return of Darth Maul, even though it leaves me shaking my head from time to time, because I gotta wonder how they're going to wind up playing this out to make it fit with the broader EU. But really, I mean, he's been dead, and they've tried to bring him back a couple of times. I guess it's three times total or something like that. And each time it's always had some kind of explanation as to why it's either non-continuity or it was Sith magic or something and wasn't really him and so forth, a doppelganger and whatnot. So, you know, those few times it's not contradicting anything. It would only contradict something if somehow he was still alive and running around the galaxy after the Clone Wars and after Episode 3 and stuff like that. But even then, they could find a way to make it work. So I'm much more excited than I am apprehensive about the Maul episodes to come. You know, the Wrath of Darth Maul book by Ryder Windham is, it's basically Maul's life story in a sense, but it starts and ends with I think it's a prologue in the final chapter, perhaps, but it deals with when Opress finds him, which is either a scene we're going to see 2 weeks from now, or it's setting up what we're going to see a couple of weeks from now. And the way Maul is at that point, I think, is going to leave a lot of people concerned, but I think that any doubts that I had disappeared when I saw that video of Sam Witwer talking about the role as Darth Maul and some of the clips to go with it, because the clips looked great. And Witwer is one of my favorite Star Wars voice actors outside of the mainstream voice actors on this particular show. Next week, though, I mean, it feels like filler. Yeah, yay, Bossk is back. Yay, it's Dengar. Okay, are they there for any purpose other than just to throw him in there Greedo style, perhaps? Same thing with seeing Boba Fett again. While I like to see the idea of where Boba Fett's storyline is going to go, I hope that they actually, you know, use the character and see where he goes. You know, the last time we saw him was just in that prison break episode, and frankly, it didn't feel like all that much. You know, it didn't add anything to Boba Fett, really. You jump back to the last times we saw him at the end of season two, those really added to the character. If he's used in such a way that it adds to his character here, great, awesome, I'm all for next week's episode. But if it's going to wind up feeling like a filler episode, and Fett and Bossk and them are just kind of there to be there, and it's more about just moving Ventress from point A to point B to get her ready for the episode the week later, then I think that's going to be a major letdown. And it's going to feel weird if this is being billed as essentially a four-part finale, if next week's episode is essentially filler. Any momentum that's building from this episode would be lost before the Maul episodes finally arrive. So I'm cautious about next week. Hopeful, but more wary probably than anything else for next week, whereas very excited for the two to come. Like an announcer at the Mos Espa Speeder Arena, I am of two minds.
Wow. Really, Nathan?
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah.
Wow.
Nice.
Why do they have to remove vote now but not remove the ooh, ah?
Yippee!
All right. Now, normally this would be the point where we go to your voicemails. However, with this story arc, we are going to, and since it is our final arc of the season, hold on to your voicemails and then have an all voicemail show after this arc is completed with our usual roundtable members who aren't on this arc, Barrett, Jen, and Jonathan. They will be joining us for the all voicemail episode that will follow, and we will see what they thought of this story arc and what all of you thought of that story arc. So don't hold on to your thoughts necessarily. Let us have them as you get them with each episode that airs, or if you want to collect them all in one voicemail at the end, feel free to do that as well. But we will get to all of those at the end of the story arc. And that's going to do it for our discussion of Massacre. We'll return next week to talk about Bounty and all of his personal issues, and also the latest Clone Wars episode.
I'm just really honored they're doing an entire episode of Clone Wars about me. That's amazing. And for those of you who maybe are new to the forums, Bounty was my forum handle for many years, so I'm stunned.
I don't know how they can get 22 minutes of animated Star Wars about paper towels.
It's an absorbent galaxy, my friend.
The enemy's going to be Darth Shamwow.
Oh no, Flo has spilled the largest cup of coffee in the galaxy.
Oh man, Ponda Baba's arm is bleeding all over again. That's okay, we got Bounty.
So we will see everyone back here next week. Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
See you next time.
See ya.
Ichuta.
Oh, rude.
Now somebody's going to tell me Ichuta does not mean goodbye, and they're going to correct me, and I'm going to have to deal with that.
Well, he did say how rude, so I think it was the moral equivalent of F off. I mean, it had that context in the movie.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all that the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademarked Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2012, all rights reserved.
All right, now that we've got all our shilling out of the way, mine and Nathan's, I mean.
Jerry, you need to promote something. Come on.
Yes, exactly.
Everything went amok. Amok, amok, amok. Grievous, and they're going at it. That didn't sound appropriate at all. Grievous, and all of a sudden, Asajj has made it all the way to...